This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. This is episode 3 in our new endeavor. Today is Thursday, February 11th. I'm Ian Denemy, joined today by Matt Larkin and Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News. And we have our very first special guest, Jeremy Roenick. Today we're talking to Jeremy Roenick about the Dion Phaneuf trade and Chicago pizza and some other more serious issues. We'll also talk about the Winnipeg Jets and what they should do going forward after signing Dustin Byfuglien. We talk about the Jonathan Drouin to Ottawa Senators rumors. And somehow later on we end up talking about O.J. Simpson. Thanks for joining us.
Next up here on the THN podcast, we'd like to introduce a special guest. He's the proud owner of 513 NHL goals. He owns the most unstoppable character in the history of NHL 94 for Sega. And he's a current NBC Sports analyst, Mr. Jeremy Roenick. JR, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are we doing today, guys?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It was good to see you down Nashville at the All-Star Game. Did you enjoy taking in that country music?
I am not a country music fan at all. But when you're in Rome, do as the Romans do, and went to a couple great bars with some great bands, and enjoyed it as much as I possibly could. But Nashville was great; they put on a great show. NHL All Star Game was great. So all in all, it was a big success in the National Hockey League.
Right on. Well, let's get you into your comfort zone and talk some hockey. I was curious, with the Dion Phaneuf trade, you know, obviously he was the captain in Toronto. He was a veteran presence in the dressing room. During your playing days, when a major player left the dressing room, what was the impact on the guys that were left behind?
Well, it's not easy, you know, because the captains and the leaders are the more popular guys in the room. They seem to carry the conversation. They seem to be the guys that everybody gravitates to, whether it's at the rink or away from the rink. So, you know, like perfect example is Joe Thornton. He's a guy that everybody wants to hang out with, whether it's going out to dinners on the road, whether it's sitting in the locker room. Everybody wants to sit next to him. I'm not saying that's exactly how Dion is, but you have the guys that everybody kind of looks to be the voice, who looks to be the leader. They watch. And when a guy like that gets traded, it leaves a big hole. And it leaves a big hole in the family unit. You know, who's going to be that guy that's going to take over, the verbal conversations, the leadership conversations, who they're going to watch. So it's very difficult. And, Dion is a very, very intimidating presence. He took a lot of the leadership qualities to heart in that locker room, and was a guy that talked a lot. And someone's going to take over that spot. It becomes, the pecking order. Who's going to take it? But it's definitely leaves a very quiet kind of somberness in the locker room.
Right. And JR, do you see anyone on the current Leaf roster? I mean, it's getting stripped down by the day. But right now, based on who's there, who do you see stepping into that leadership role, if anybody?
I don't really know many of the guys personally. If you look at the way that they play, Van Riemsdyk is a guy that I would look to, who's had some success, who has been a mainstay for a couple of years. He's probably been the most successful guy there in the last couple of years. I would look to him to kind of take over a little bit of the reins. There's really not much. There's a young group. It's a very young group, but it's a rebuild group. And I don't think Kadri would be a guy that I would look at to do that. I think he's still too young and a little bit too immature. It's a very slim pickings. Very slim pickings for sure.
Right. Well, I'm glad you actually mentioned Nazem Kadri because it's sort of a good segue. So we have Nazem making the throat slash gesture at Mark Giordano the other night and claiming his head was a bit fuzzy. He didn't really remember what happened after the hit. And it comes on the heels of the Dennis Wiedemann hearings, and we still don't know exactly what Dennis Wiedemann's intent was and whether the NHLPA is going to use concussion signs to argue that he wasn't in his right mind. And I think it's a great question to ask you, JR, because you were a player who played a very physical game. You got in a lot of battles. Do you think it's realistic for guys who have taken big hits to use that defense? And in your experience, do you have any memories of playing games where you sort of watched the TV footage after and said, wow, I took a big hit in that game. I don't remember what happened. Do you think that's possible?
I've been hit real hard in my time, and I've been hit a lot harder than those two guys did in those situations. So I know what it feels like when you do get hit like that. I don't buy for a minute or a second that those guys didn't know what they were doing or didn't have any idea what was going on. Not a chance in hell that they were dazed enough to not know what was going on. So that being said, I mean, there's guys will find any way to try to get out of a punishment for sure. You know, there's only one time in my career when I got knocked out by Jimmy Johnson in Minnesota where I got totally knocked out cold and ended up waking up in the training room about 15 or 20 minutes later. And not knowing how I got there, and then the trainers told me that I actually walked there myself, skated there myself, and I don't remember it. That, you know, that scared me a lot, knowing that you can literally have part of your life just erased from your mind. But those weren't that situation at all. But I can't see how I would go out there and make a gesture like that or hit a referee being in the state that I was in. So that'd be a little different. Doesn't happen too often. I don't think it's going to hold water too much, especially with Wyatt, because Wiedemann, he had the presence at the blue line to tell his bench he was coming for a change, to raise his stick and call for a change. If you're buzzed, the last thing you're going to do is to call for a change to your line mate. That's a pretty heads up thing to do, to let your line mate know that you're coming for a change. So he's in his right mind there, and then coach puts him back out, and he practices the next day. So all that stuff doesn't hold water.
Fair enough. Some more news that came out today. The NHL draft is going to come to Chicago in 2017. That's obviously a city you know well, and I know it's a favorite of a lot of hockey writers. What are your memories of Chicago, and do you find yourself there in your retirement days?
You don't have enough time in your podcast to talk about my memories of Chicago. It is the best city in the country in terms of, its nightlife, it's the big city, the things that they have to do there, the people, the fans are great. It's a great place to have an NHL draft. It's obviously, you can see the fan participation and the fan support that they have there. They have 2 million people for a Stanley Cup parade. And then every city that the team goes to, there's more Blackhawk fans in there than the team that's home. And I think Chicago will be a great venue, a great city for to host the people of the world to come in for the draft. It's be a special thing.
So now, very crucial question here: do you prefer like the Al's beef or deep dish pizza when you're in Chicago?
I'm not a beef guy. I'll go with pizza all the time. Lou Malnati's. One of my favorites. So you got to go to Lou Malnati's Pizza.
There you go. I have been there. It is good.
Excellent. I've been there too. It's fantastic. I love it. One more question for you, JR. If we look at the trade deadline approaching a few weeks away, we've seen a couple big dominoes fall because Dustin Byfuglien signed his long-term contract. Dion Phaneuf's been traded. Of the remaining guys out there that have been talked about a lot, Andrew Ladd, your Keith Yandles, your Jordan Eberle. Is there a guy in your mind that you think is the number one piece out there that could put a team over the top?
Good question. Andrew Ladd is one of my more favorite players in the game, not because of how exciting he's to play, but because of the type of player he is. He's the leader, the grinder, the guy on and off the ice who's going to make sure the guys are being responsible. He's already won a couple cups. And you just look at what he could do for a team that's close to a Stanley Cup run. I think he's one of the best out there, without question. I can see
Excellent. Well, it's very well said, JR, and we really appreciate your insight. It's been great to have you on, and before we let you go, can you just tell everyone what you're up to these days and where can they find you?
I'm doing a lot of different things. You know, NBC Sports Network is running me all over the place. I just finished an interview with Victor Hedman, which was an incredible 45 minutes. I've never seen a guy with more power in my life. The kid is insane. So I just finished that. Just be seeing that NBC. I have my podcast, Jeremy. It's Ronick Life Pod with JR and Jaffe. So we've been going about 5 or 6 weeks now and doing very, very well. And then my book's still rolling around there. Everybody can find it at RonickLife.com. That's my website. I personalize and send them out. And besides that, I'm just trying to avoid the Twitter haters and you know, trying to keep my head above water.
Great, thanks, JR. Keep fighting the good fight against the haters. Hope to have you again soon.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
Thanks again to Jeremy Ronick for joining us today on the podcast. So at the end there, he talked about Andrew Ladd being the player he would most want to target at the deadline. So we know the Winnipeg Jets have just re-signed Dustin Byfuglien. JR thinks they should trade Andrew Ladd. What do you guys think they should do with Ladd? And what does the next kind of 3 or 4 months look like for the Winnipeg Jets? There's a lot of moving parts there all of a sudden.
Yeah, I feel like Winnipeg made their decision, you know, about this whole situation long ago when the leak came out about, you know, how much Byfuglien, Ladd, and Trouba wanted. I mean, it must have come from the team because those guys all have different agents, and you can't coordinate a leak through 3 different agents. So I think they were setting the fan base up for what was a very difficult decision. I mean, Andrew Ladd is the heartbeat of this team, but Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, there's only one Dustin Byfuglien, and I think they did very well with the contract they signed him to. I think, you know, speaking with other agents that aren't related to Byfuglien, they could have probably gotten a little more on the open market, but Winnipeg made it work. And I think with Ladd, I mean, teams are going to love him come trade deadline time. I think, you know, he's got the cups. You know, he can play a physical game. He can do a lot of things on the ice for you. He can bring leadership, obviously. And I think Winnipeg has put themselves in a position where, you know, they can still re-sign Jacob Trouba. They can make those other re-signings. And unfortunately, it seems like Andrew Ladd was the sacrificial lamb here.
That's right. And you know, in defense of Ladd, if I remember correctly, the rumored contract was 6 years, $36 million, correct?
So yeah, that was the rumor.
And to me, Andrew Ladd, a player who's a captain, a Stanley Cup winger, winner, a guy who can get 25 goals and 55, 60 points in his sleep, I think he absolutely, on the open market with several years left in his career at playing at a high level, he's worth $6 million a year. So if that's really what he asked for, I don't blame him at all, even if it means it prices him out of Winnipeg. And I think that the potential for return for Ladd is going to be massive at the deadline. I think there's going to be a huge bidding war for his services. And I've said many times the baseline to me that I compare, if you look at what Antoine Vermette netted last year for the Arizona Coyotes, he got a first-round pick and a prospect, Claes Dalbec. And I think we can all agree, Andrew Ladd's worth it. It's no disrespect to Mr. Vermette. I know he had the Stanley Cup winning goal. Or not the winning goal, but he had some big goals in the playoffs. But Ladd is worth more than Antoine Vermette. Ladd will command at least a first-round pick, a prospect, and, I don't know, another pick, something like that?
It's intriguing. I mean, it's funny. Like, it's all about the market, right, and how teams see themselves set up. The X factor for me this year is so many teams are still in it. So many teams don't know how to proceed. Like, if you're the Boston Bruins right now, do you trade Louis Erickson because you might lose him on the open market? Or do you hang on to him because you think, you know, we can get into the playoffs? And, you know, if the stars align, maybe we can go a couple of rounds. And if we lose Louis in the summer, then, we did our best shot. They might still want to re-sign him anyways and decide that, you know, it's worth that sacrifice as well. I mean, look at Arizona, look at Vancouver. If you're these teams, you might have thought, you know, at some point, like certainly with Arizona coming into the season, you would have thought they would have been sellers at this point, but I don't think you can make that that call just yet. I think you're going to have to wait. If you're Vancouver, it's the same deal. We thought they'd be rebuilding. We thought Calgary would stay as a playoff team. That didn't happen. So all of a sudden, now we're saying, well, does Calgary hold on to Yuri Hudler, or do they trade him? There's so many moving parts.
I'd be interested to know what Winnipeg Jets fans actually think about all this. You know, you think about Andrew Ladd, and he's sort of the heart and soul of that team. You know, he's a Western Canadian guy. He's the captain. It's a city that's desperate for a winner. You know, you saw the euphoria when they just made the playoffs last year, got swept. You know, do you think they're patient enough to endure another little rebuild? Everyone kind of had high expectations this year, but, you know, are they willing to say, that's great, we want Byfuglien, you know, for the length of that contract, and we want a first-round pick and keep adding to our stockpile of good-looking prospects?
It's a very fair question. I remember actually speaking to a friend of mine who was a Jets fan recently, and he said they have to be careful. The MTS Center is rocking, but we saw what happened 20 years ago. If they start losing for too long, the seats could start getting emptied. At the same time, the Jets have such an elite farm system. Even though, yes, maybe last year it turns out they're ahead of schedule, I think they can reload quickly on top of your youngsters like your Scheifele, your Trouba. You've got great prospects coming up like the super fast Kyle Connor. And I'm very excited about Connor Hellebuyck in net. And to me, he's a future franchise goaltender. And he's a guy who always had that pedigree. He was playing in the World Championship for Team USA before he even played an NHL game. And nothing he's done so far is a fluke at all. I think they found their guy. So even if the Jets have regressed a bit this year, I do think they could get back on track, maybe as early as next year, depending on how far the young kids come along.
And here's something to consider as well. Winnipeg's in last in the division right now as we speak, even though Minnesota has gone into the tank. The Wild are still 5 points up on Winnipeg. What if they get Austin Matthews? I mean, it's a draft lottery, so they don't have to be the very, very bottom. You know, if they got Austin Matthews, that's a player that's jumping onto your roster right away. And all of a sudden, you look at your depth chart and you say, okay, well, we got Austin Matthews and Mark Scheifele as our centers going on from here. I'm not sure what you do with Brian Little in the long term. But, you know, for his rookie season, you know, you want to shelter Matthews a little bit. So, you know, Scheifele probably takes on the top line of the other team if you can make it happen. But all of a sudden, that really opens things up. I obviously, you know, with Hellebuyck, I agree with you that he's the future. If anything, they got to figure out how to ditch the rest of Andre Pavlik's contract, because he's still got another year, if I'm not mistaken. It almost feels like they just need to really like hone what they have, and you know, there's obviously some guys having poor years that have tanked them a bit, but there's still a lot to like with Winnipeg. They just got to put it together.
Winnipeg at this very moment are 4 points from 30th in the league and 7 points from a playoff spot.
Wow. That's parity, baby.
That's a weird no man's land that, you know, unless you're a team that's trying to tank, you don't really want to be in that position.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, to be realistic, like if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and you're looking at this team and how they've played, how do you not just kind of pull the plug on the season at this point and say, like, we're not going to beat Chicago or St. Louis in the playoffs? You know, even if, you know, we're not going to beat any of the California teams if it happened to get that far, or if they were the, you know, the wild card team. I think you just have to get some value and you get some good reps. You get Hellebuyck playing down the stretch more and just getting those reps in, and you do what you can with Ladd, because clearly he wasn't in the plans. You just say, this is not our year. It was nice to get the playoffs last year, but I'd rather have Austin Matthews than get swept again in the first round.
And I think that they're far enough out of it right now, I think we could go as far as saying it would be irresponsible of Chevy to not trade. And I mean it. I'm totally serious. At this point, if they don't make the most of those expiring assets, I think it's a failure for the Jets. I think they have to do it. Especially, you know, I don't think they're going to re-sign Ladd anyways, because they've got some restricted free agents to re-sign. You've got Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba this summer. I guess the interesting question, too, is do they still deserve long-term deals yet? Or have they regressed to the point where the Jets have to look at bridge deals? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually, you know, you look at the Jets having an internal cap, it would actually behoove them to have bridge deals on a guy like Trouba and a guy like Scheifele, because with that Byfuglien deal kicking in, you know, you have to figure out how the numbers are going to work, and you're going to want to bring some other guys in. It almost seems like with those guys backsliding a bit, as you were saying, give them 2 years, keep the gross amount down on that contract, and say, like, prove us wrong, boys. Like, make us pay you $7 million next time instead of, you know, 2 or 3.
Good word, by the way, behoove.
I love the word behoove.
Ryan Kennedy in the office, for you listeners out there, he's good for an obscure word like that every day.
Sometimes I just make them up, too.
I wouldn't know the difference. I don't think I've heard behoove before.
That's the thing. It's a high wire act. Half the time it's just, I'm probably not using it right. But
your new words embiggen all of us.
Exactly. Yeah. It's perfectly cromulent. Well, I mean, we do have the buzz coming out of Ottawa that Jonathan Drouin might be on their radar, and we were talking about this a little in the office today. What exactly do you get in return from Drouin at this point if Ottawa is your trade partner? I mean, Cody Ceci's a great young defenseman. It sounds like Tampa would like a defenseman back in an ideal world, but you just got Dan Phaneuf partially to play with Cody Ceci. So, I mean, if I'm reading the tea leaves, you know, Patrick Vierkoch is an option. I'd be a little disappointed if I'm a Lightning fan if Patrick Vierkoch was the return. You know, no offense to Patrick Vierkoch, but I mean, Jonathan Drouin, the potential is still there, even though this is clearly, you know, a bad situation for all involved in Tampa. We were also talking about, you know, maybe go with a prospect defenseman like Andreas Englund, or even Thomas Chabot, who was just drafted by Ottawa. But I mean, the Sens, they already traded a second rounder in 2017. The Leafs, they do have their second rounder this year. What do you do if you're Steve Yzerman and Ottawa comes knocking?
I think the question to me is, do the Lightning want NHL talent right away? And because technically right now, Jonathan Drouin is a minor leaguer. I'm doing quote marks with my hands. You can't see that right now. But technically, he's a minor leaguer. But for a team like Tampa Bay that I do think is in win-now mode, especially with Steven Stamkos still UFA, ideally you want NHL talent to augment your playoff roster. That's why I'm not sure if Ottawa has the right guys. It has some good prospects you could trade for Drouin, but if you're going for a Patrick Vierkoch? He's a guy whose name I never say out loud, by the way. If you're going for him, that guy, does that boost your lineup enough? I don't know. And is there anyone else, another veteran on the Senators roster that Brian Murray would be willing to move?
It seems like it doesn't seem like a perfect fit. Now, to play devil's advocate, and this is something that I wrote about on the blog a couple of weeks ago, back when the wounds were freshest, the value of Jonathan Drouin dove on the open market, simply because teams knew that Tampa wanted to trade him. And, you know, this is a player that has shown flashes of brilliance in the NHL, but hasn't done it over a sustained amount of time. Whether that's his fault or John Cooper's, that's up to you, the dear listener, to decide. But it almost seems now like, you know, maybe time has sort of healed things, at least in the minds of, you know, the hockey world, where it's like, man, Jonathan Drouin's a great young player. I feel like I'm not really sure which way my mind is going on this, where it's like, man, you should get more for Jonathan Drouin, versus a couple of weeks ago, not that he's played a game in that time, that it's like, whatever they can get for Jonathan Drouin would be fine.
It's interesting, too, because to me, the sample size is small and the reputation is obviously damaged, but the production in a per 60 minutes production has been very good for Drouin. He's been very productive in his limited opportunities, and he started the year on a line with Steven Stamkos. He had 6 points in 5 games. He looked like that dynamic offensive player he was supposed to be, and I don't think we know yet that he isn't. So to me, I still think the Lightning, they don't want to give him away for 70 cents on the dollar. They have to understand his talent level and make sure they get as much back for them as possible.
And I'm equally interested in what the Senators are doing. You know,
yes.
The Phaneuf trade is very much a win-now kind of move. They shed some contracts, but that was just to take on Dion's $7 million. And Drouin is more of a win-later. They're sitting 5 points out of a playoff spot. We just talked about it with Winnipeg being kind of stuck in that middle, and you know them being. It behooves them to miss the playoffs and get a high draft pick. What is Ottawa just setting themselves up to finish ninth and you know being in that murky middle, the way you know the circa 2008 Maple Leafs used to every year just finish ninth and get nothing out of it. What is the end game for the Senators?
I mean, my theory is that it looks like a win now move on the surface, but it's actually a win later move for Ottawa more than it might seem, because Tiafoe's 30 years old. At the end of his contract, he'll be 36, so he still has a fair amount of good years left. He doesn't have to be the top pairing guy. But at the same time, if you're a young team like the Senators, you're building around your Curtis Lazar, your Mika Zibanejad, your Eric Karlsson, who's still very young, Cody Ceci, etc., you still need some veterans on the team to sort of shepherd the young guys. So I do think that Phaneuf, while yes, it's true, he might help them get better and sort of pull them up into an annoying spot just out of the playoffs in the short term, I think in the long term, he actually does fit a plan, just as a sort of a mentor guy, especially for a Cody Ceci, maybe on the second pair down the road.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my answer for your query would be they might be one of the few teams where it's okay to finish ninth, because, as you said, guys like Zibanejad and Ceci and Lazar, they're still getting their NHL legs under them. They're, you know, we're starting to see what they can do on a full-time basis, and they're going to be counted on heavier next year. Playing in important games late in the season and getting good minutes, I think has value, and they are stuck in the middle. I don't think if they got into the playoffs by some other miracle, Andrew Hammond related or not, I don't think they would go very far anyways. But I think playing to the end would be a good experience for this group and would help them build for next season. Because if you look at them, you know, you look at what top teams have, you got to have an all-world defenseman. So check that box off. They've got Erik Karlsson. In goal, Craig Anderson is sometimes great, sometimes not great. So that's, you know, they're in the range. I don't know if they're quite there. Number one center, I don't think they have that guy right now. They've got some pretty decent guys. Can Zibanejad grow into that role? I don't know. That's a pretty big X factor. I think Kyle Turris is pretty good, but I don't think he's going to be that guy. You know, he's more of a number two guy if things are a best case scenario. So for now, I think you're going with this lot, and you've got some talent on the wings with Bobby Ryan. But you want those young guys to step up and see what you have to work with and how you might need to augment that in the near future.
You know what's kind of funny, though? The NHL's never seen parity like we have right now. And yet, all we want to do is put teams into one of two boxes, either tank nation or contenders.
Right.
You know, someone has to finish ninth through, you know, 13th.
Yeah.
Media and teams and fan bases think, well, we didn't make the playoffs, but we didn't get a top three pick, so what a waste. We're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one sort of guard for that is you have teams that have done a good job building up their prospect cupboards. And, you know, Winnipeg would be a pretty good example like that. Obviously, it'd be amazing if they got Austin Matthews or Patrick Laine. But, you know, Nikolai Ehlers is going to be even better next year, and Connor Hellebuyck is going to be even better next year, and maybe Nick Patan takes a step up. You have assets there, and it's the same with Ottawa, where it feels like these young kids, they just need a bit of time. You know, when you're talking about the Leafs in the late 2000s, it didn't really seem like there was any hope. Like, you couldn't say, like, well, once that guy gets better, they'll be great, because you'd look at that roster and be like, this is as good as they're really ever going to be with this particular group.
And I think one thing that's exciting to me and gives me sort of hope from a trading perspective, because of this parity, we are seeing more hockey trades. And the trade that comes to mind for me is Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson. I really love that trade, especially from a Nashville standpoint, where they are a team that's sort of dangling around that number nine spot. And David Poile decided, you know what? No, I'm not going to let us sink and tank and go for another high pick. We need to be competitive. I'm going to try and get our franchise center right now. I'm going to trade a young asset to get another young asset and just try and be competitive. And I think that type of trade is the product of parity, because every team's got to give something and get something that can help them right now.
Yeah, not to mention the salary, too. I think that's going to be a big thing come this trade deadline is who can actually afford to make trades. And I think you're right, you'll see a lot of hockey trades. And, you know, speaking of that sort of mushy middle, like there, Nashville, there's a team where, you know, if you're David Poile and you look at your roster now, you say, okay, I've got my potential number one center in Ryan Johansson. I've got two amazing defensemen in Shea Weber and Roman Josi. And I had an all-world goalie in Pekka Rinne, who just happens to be having an off year. Assuming Pekka Rinne gets back to form next year, you've got all your foundations there. And you've got some, you know, you've got some nice pieces to go around it. All of a sudden, Nashville looks like they could be dangerous.
I'm hoping they get a little dangerous this year. I'll admit I put a little bit of money on the Predators to win the Stanley Cup recently just because the odds just kept going in the tank. So, you know, at 36-1, I'll throw a couple bucks on the Predators to make a, you know, if they get in there, they could be a Kings-style Stanley Cup run and net me a little bit of a bonus.
Yeah, they're not going to take your thumbs if you lose, are they?
No, I don't think so.
And the thing, too, I mean, David Poile, one thing I've always liked about Poile is that he's one of the ultimate buckaroo cowboy GMs at the trade deadline. He's the guy that, you know, he traded for Peter Forsberg, he traded for Steve Sullivan, he traded for, I think, Jason Arnott 1 year, if I'm not mistaken. He's always been aggressive and willing to take chances at the deadline. So if you guys are Poile and you're sort of in this bubble situation like Nashville is, what do you do? Do you think it's okay to reload, or do you continue the sentiment of the Johansson trade and say, no, we know we have something that should compete right now, we're going to make a push?
I think it seems like they want to make a push. We had a story on the site today saying maybe they should go after Scott Hartnell, find another guy to play on that top line with Johansson. You know, the window for any team in the NHL to win, I think, gets pretty short in a cap league. So if you know, and we've seen that any team 1-8 in the playoffs can make a run and win the cup. So if you're part of that discussion, I say go for it.
Yeah, and I mean, as a bonus, you got all the good vibes of hosting the All-Star game. And, you know, that's what we saw in Columbus last year. Even though the Jackets fell short, they had that amazing run to end the year. And the hype around the team and the excitement in the community was so big. And I think it kind of fooled all of us. Where, you know, the fans were excited, the franchise was excited, and it was like, next year we're going to be great. And I, you know, like, honestly, we did an office pool. I thought Columbus might be a dark horse to win the division. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So I'm not going to get that money back. But, yeah, I think Nashville could be in a similar situation where the fan base is really energized right now. And, yeah, you might as well go for it.
And it'd be interesting to see Scotty Hartnell go back to the team that drafted him. There's something poetic about that, returning to the nest after a long journey. And you know what? I think Hartnell is a sleeper guy to target at the trade deadline. I know he's into his 30s now, and he's got that $4.75 million cap hit. But to me, for what Hartnell brings to the table, I don't know if that's even an overpay. And yes, you have to keep him for another couple of years. He's under contract past this season. But I think Hartnell still brings a lot to the table. He's very physical. He's a power play specialist. He's a guy that I would consider targeting if I was a contender. I have thoughts on people who are so different. The Kardashian, if you hate the Kardashian stuff.
The second one's even worse.
It's so shameless. Like they literally have a scene of the Kardashians sitting in front of a TV going, spelling out their name, like clapping, going K-A-R-S-H-A-D-I-A-N or whatever. They're like, I don't know if I can spell their name.
But
they literally, so while David Schwimmer is talking on a press conference, they show the girls sitting and they're yelling out the letters to spell their name. It's so gratuitous.
Why? They're not executive producing this or anything, are they? It's really just they're trying to make it clear that O.J. Simpson was friends with the Kardashians' dad, and there's another pop culture tie-in.
It's for millennials, right? It's for I'm sure everyone who's watched it so far has said, "Oh, I've watched it with so and so who was born in 1988 and actually doesn't remember the trial." And for this person, and I can say that about my wife, who's a few years younger than me. For her, it's all new. Whereas I was, because I was a pretty nerdy kid when I was 12, I was like, I recognize Chris Darden. I can tell. I know all those people because I remember the trial. But for this millennial audience, I think it goes hand in hand with the Kardashians because the people that don't know the story are the same people that are interested in your Kardashians. And that's the way to attract
them. And they're also
trying
to make it very much a drama. You and I know the story of the O.J. Simpson case because, we were nerdy kids in Red Sports Illustrated and it was all over the news. Same thing, our wives didn't follow O.J., so this could be a fictional you know, drama starring David Schwimmer as Kim Kardashian's dad.
Yeah. At the time, it was funny, too, because I remember watching it all, and it was bizarre because, for me, it was like, hey, it's Norbert from The Naked Gun. Like, I don't remember him playing football at all. It's like, hey, it's OJ from The Naked Gun. What happened to that guy?
And was OJ on Monday Night Football? Or
yeah, I think he was.
Like, I know he was an analyst or a sideline reporter, but it might have been with Monday Night Football.
He was in the business for sure.
And he was probably better than Dennis Miller.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week and update you on episode 3 of People vs. O.J. Simpson.